listening to the Riley Auto Parts Roadshow on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from Radio Row in Miami, this is The Boss and the Gloss. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Well, welcome back. We are broadcasting live from Radio Row, or we were, and then we were not, as all the internet connection here on the floor went out. But I am delighted to be back. The rumors, Carla, that you were the one who tripped the switch that turned off all of Radio Row, you're not the one who did it, are you?
You would think so.
They're all.
I can be sneaky.
They've all been circling around you, wondering, why did this woman do this thing?
But remember in 2013, in the New Orleans Mercedes Dome, it was the Blackout Bowl.
Yes.
The Harbaugh Bowl.
Yes.
When the Ravens went on and beat the 49ers with that momentum shift, and they had like an over a minute blackout or whatever that craziness was. We just had that here.
You're right. It felt like that here because it was such a preposterous thing that this actually took place. And everybody here who loves to talk, all these radio personalities were cut off from the rest of the world. Not a good day. But what is a good moment is that we have Chris Long joining us on set. Chris, welcome onto the show. You're on with David and Carla.
What's up, guys? Don't speak too soon. It might not be a good moment.
It's going to be a great moment. Awesome. You are the sunshine after the blackout. Here we go.
Okay, cool.
Yes. So Chris Long, of course, longstanding defensive end for the Rams. He played with the Patriots and the Eagles. And you are a Super Bowl champion with the Eagles and with the Patriots.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it never gets old.
Never gets old.
I don't think there's many of you that have won consecutive Super Bowls with different teams.
I think there's only like three? Or four. Myself, LeGarrette Blount, same year. So we both left the Patriots, ended up in Philly. And, yeah, that was special.
Okay, it's good to bet on you two.
Yeah, well, I always joke that all that was for me was just picking the right place. So, yeah, I'm a good odds maker.
Well, it's sort of fun in our show prep, knowing you were going to come. Carla had a question. She said, I want to ask him why he retired so young. And I said, well, I don't think he's that young for NFL standards, but you had a good long career, 11 years in the NFL.
I did. You know, I was 30. I turned 34 right as I retired. And, you know, for me, yeah, I had a couple more years maybe in me. You know, you can never say that for sure. So I'm always, you know, hesitant to say I had a few more in me because it's never easy. But I was playing well. But for me, it was more about, I had this shot clock in my head my whole life. I saw my dad play 13 years.
Sure.
Saw how trying that was on him and also grew up watching it. My kids aren't that old still, so I didn't want to miss anything. And also, I feel good. Like, I'm not in pain. I walk away on my own terms. I saw so many guys
go out on top.
Yeah, so many guys leave bitter because, you know, there's only three ways you can go out. Your terms, their terms, or, you know, injury, you know. And and so I just chose my terms.
Very good. We're talking to Chris Long. I'd love to ask you about the team for which you played the longest, the Rams.
Yeah.
Of course, they were here last year.
Yeah.
And a disappointing season this year.
Yeah.
That they haven't really recovered from.
Yeah. What do you think went wrong this year?
Well, I think Todd's health is a concern.
Yep.
So not being able to lean on him. And then the offensive line kind of fell apart there. Some players got older. They let guys like Saffold walk in free agency. And, of course, they stabilized late a little bit with some of their line shuffling offensively. And obviously paying Jared Goff that kind of money. And then even making the trade for Ramsey, who's a generational talent. But what do you give up to get him? And now you've kind of cornered yourself into being this defensive football team because now it's going to be hard to build through free agency and in the draft because of your cap number and because of the lack of picks. And that zone, that stretch zone scheme, it's so dependent for Jared Goff. Is that scheme takes the pressure off quarterbacks. That's what you saw with Gurley and when they were really running that well. But now that they can't run it well, you're seeing all the warts exposed for Jared. And
yep.
It's just this, it's, I don't know what they do.
Do you think Belichick exposed that in the Super Bowl? I mean, they were looking unstoppable until that game. And it looked like Jared Goff, he just continually looking to the sidelines at McVay before every play, just like deer in the headlights. And I feel like he may be exposed to secret and now the NFL's got it.
Well, I think with any player that's been around a couple years with any scheme, there is a learning curve where the rest of the league has an opportunity to figure out that player. And we throw that around a lot, you know, will they figure out this guy? Will they figure out that guy? I think it's only really applicable when it's a very scheme-dependent operation. And I thought that, you know, offensively for L.A., they have some good players, but the one guy they had that keeps you up at night is Todd Gurley. And if he's not healthy, the whole, you know, the whole Jenga thing falls down. So that was as much it. And Todd not getting the ball as much down the stretch last year, I don't know how healthy he was a big deal. But you give Bill two. I mean, you got to remember, Sean McVay's younger than me. So this is his first
Super
Bowl.
And I think you're really, really young.
So. Yeah, that's good. That's good. All right, because 34. But, yeah, Sean's going to get other opportunities. So this is his first Super Bowl. People forget that, like, you can't expect him to out-scheme the GOAT with 2 weeks. I mean, the GOAT's going to usually come out on top there.
Right, exactly.
We're talking to two-time Super Bowl champion Chris Long. Chris, what brings you to Ready or Row? What are you talking about today?
Well, I'm here with Emergent BioSolutions, and, you know, I partner with a lot of groups. I've been saying this all day. This is one I'm excited about partnering with, not just from a business standpoint, but I believe in what they do. The opioid crisis is huge. It's sweeping the country. It's scary. I'm a dad with two kids. I'm scared of what the future is like with these drugs and whatnot. And, you know, they produce Narcan, which, if you're familiar, is a drug that can reverse the effects of an opioid overdose, of which there are 130 fatal overdoses a day. And, you know, a stadium full of people, 50, 55,000 people die a year. Hmm. So this is a big issue that we have to solve comprehensively. But a group like BioSolutions, Emergent BioSolutions, is doing a great thing in putting a Band-Aid on it for now, because you have to have a way that can that you can reverse these terrible overdoses. And it's a nasal spray. It's easy. And it's not all addicts overdosing. Like, I got buddies who are cops. They talk about, you know, out in the field having to use Narcan to save lives. But, like, in your house, you know, you might have some medicine. We all might have some prescription medicine. It's scary. I got kids. It's scary. We're going to get some in our house.
No, I love this. And you're right on the cutting edge of what's becoming a crisis in the United States.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome stuff. Chris Long, thank you so much for joining
us. Walter Payton, Man of the Year, too. Yeah,
for a couple more days, I'm reigning.
Hey, you work that. You should. It's impressive.
Okay, cool. I appreciate it.
Great to have you.
Thank you, Chris.
Nice meeting you. Yeah.
Is an O'Reilly Auto Parts Roadshow on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from Radio Row in Miami, this is the Boss and the Gloss. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Indeed, this is a special edition, Boss and Gloss. Great to be here in Miami with you, Carla. And, you know, yesterday, Roger Goodell had a sort of State of the NFL address that he does every year during the week of Radio Row. And the hot topic was the hiring of minority coaches. And, of course, the Rooney Rule was put in place with the intent that more minorities would ascend to head coaching positions. But we've just gone through this whole offseason cycle. There were a number of openings, and a minority was not hired by rule.
One was. We had five head coaching openings. Vacancies and Ron Rivera.
I did not think
Washington.
Of Ron Rivera as a minority, right. But you're right, absolutely. So I think there's still frustration that there has not been more progress, right, on this question. And the Rooney Rule was put in place quite a few years ago, and not much has changed.
Yeah, so this is crazy. The Rooney Rule was put in place in 2003.
Yep.
At that time, there were three African-American head coaches in the NFL. Fast forward to 2020, 17 years later, there are three African-American head coaches in the NFL.
I mean, that's an amazing stat after 17 years. So that is, and that is what Goodell was having to address yesterday, and the media certainly asked lots of questions about it. Yet there doesn't seem to be a quick fix, right? I mean, you can't tell an owner whom to hire. You can tell an owner he has to interview a minority, but much of that has been almost a charade, right?
Right.
The Cowboys brought in...
I know who you're thinking of.
Well, the Cowboys brought in Marvin Lewis, and they interviewed him. But I don't think the Cowboys had any intention of seriously considering Marvin Lewis as their next head coach. I mean, they just had
That Jason, raised an eyebrow when I heard who they were bringing in.
Well, that was the Rooney Rule, right? They did what they had to do. Now, Eric Bieniemy, the offensive coordinator of the Chiefs, he's an African-American.
He's been on everybody's short list.
Who has been on everybody's short list yet. He will be the offensive coordinator of the Chiefs next year. He is not going to get that job. I don't know what Roger Goodell is going to do to fix this or address it more aggressively than what has been in place. I think it's a tough nut to crack.
I think it is really tough. And you look even in the front offices, there is one African-American GM in football, and that's Chris Greer of the Miami Dolphins.
Of the Dolphins, of course.
I mean,
who has an African-American head coach in Brian Flores.
Brian Flores. And the other African-American head coaches is Brian Flores, obviously, that you just said, the Chargers coach Anthony Lynn, and the Steelers' Mike Tomlin.
And Mike Tomlin, who has been exceptional.
Like, really, 17 years, and it's completely lateral.
Hmm.
And Goodell did say, we have to improve on this. I mean, I don't know how he's going to plan to do it. But at least admitting that and knowing that and being charged with that is the first step.
Yeah, the how is the tough piece of this. I will say there is some of this that gives me optimism that time will cure this a little bit. In this regard, where do you usually go find a head coach?
Well, through your coordinators.
They're usually coming from the assistant coordinators. And over time, the assistant coordinators are becoming more diverse.
Yeah.
The assistant coaches are becoming more diverse. And if, in fact, assistant coaches are more diverse, inevitably, when you go to find a head coach, you'll probably land with more diversity there. And I guess even go further upstream, where do these assistant coaches come from? Well, they usually come from former players.
And this is a league of 70% African American.
The league is 70%
minority.
African American. So if you think the pipeline of players to assistant coaches to then ultimately head coaches will play out, that would certainly bode well for the future. However, I guess the other side of it is if 30% of the players are white, and there's a propensity to hire that 30% pool, that's still a good number of people who are white and can take those assistant head coaching jobs. So it will remain to be seen, and I really find that a hard one. The other place you go get head coaches is down at the college ranks. And if you look at the great college programs right now, they're largely run by white males.
Right. I don't know the percentage. That would be fascinating to find out. But, you know, off the cuff, Dino Babers at Syracuse comes to mind. I mean, I can't really think of a lot of African-American coaches, minority coaches.
No, but those head coaches across the great SEC programs.
Manny Diaz in Miami. But, I'm telling you, I'm stretching to try and find this.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
All right, well, we have a real treat now. Joining us here on set is Franco Harris, the great one. You're on with David and Carla. Franco Harris, of course, the Hall of Fame running back from the Steelers, a guy who broke my heart a couple times as a Cowboys fan.
And as a Raiders fan.
He broke your heart.
Oh, my goodness. Hey,
I'm glad we broke some hearts.
You did. You're a heartbreaker, Franco.
Yeah, it's sort of tough to let you sit down at this table right now, but we are honored to have you, actually. Welcome onto the show. You're on with David and Carla. It's Franco Harris joining us here on set. Franco, of course, was a running back for the Steelers for seemingly forever.
13 seasons. 12 with the Steelers, one with the Seahawks. A four-time Super Bowl champ.
Four for four.
That's impressive.
Four for four.
And you had a big, big, big role in that.
Well, you know what? We had a great run during the 70s.
You really did.
It was a
led by none other than our friend right here.
Well, you know, you're too young to have known the 70s.
Yeah. Oh, Franco, we're best friends already.
Yeah.
But it was a great run.
You know, when I look back on those four Super Bowl champions, my memory won't be about this as good as yours. Obviously, you played there. But it felt like those first two championship teams were more old school, running game and great defense. And the second two championship teams, the offense opened up a bit. Bradshaw was able to throw some deep routes. Swan and Stallworth were more of a factor. Is that fair to say that the offense evolved a little bit during your tenure in the four Super Bowls?
You hit it right on the head. And I want to mention, just to show the greatness on our team, that we won two Super Bowls back-to-back, right? Which is tough to do when back-to-back Super Bowls. But we won two before the rule change in 1977, and we won two after the rule change in 1977. And to me, that's big because we won it with basically the same people made the adjustments, as you said, were opened up more. In 77, when they made you can't touch receivers after 5 yards, you know, to open up. We adjusted, and voila.
You won both ways. Good defense throughout.
Good defense throughout all four. But offensively, we, you know, as you said, it changed, and we made the adjustments. and kept winning.
We're talking
to
be a champion. Four-time Super Bowl champion Franco Harris. So, Franco, we've got just a minute left. I want to hear what has brought you to Radio Row.
Oh, I'm here representing Dolorex, and we're CBD products. And these are CBD products that perform, you know, because of our process, water-soluble, goes into your system quickly and efficiently. And also it's one you can trust. 100% organic hemp, THC-free,
oh,
you know, made in FDA-approved facilities, and it's tracked all the way from seed to the shelf. So a CBD product you can trust and also one that performs. And in this market that's getting saturated, it's very important.
Yeah, it is.
Trust and performance, and Dolorex is that are the products that that meet your need for that.
All right, you heard it from Franco Harris, Dolorex, a great CBD product. Franco, so much, thank you so much for joining us on set. Really
appreciate the chance to meet you. Have a great rest of the weekend.
Thank you.
Best of luck to you. So great
thank
to meet you.
Thank you very much.
Listening to an O'Reilly Auto Parts Roadshow on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from Radio Row in Miami, this is the Boss and the Gloss. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Okay, what a treat to get Franco Harris on.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you talk about a legend.
He's a heartbreaker for you and me.
Well, he is. Wow. I mean, because those Steeler teams in the 70s beat the Cowboys, and then they beat your Raiders. And so you and I are sitting here. It's tough to face Franco. He was a stud. 9 Pro Bowls.
Consecutive. I think that's even more important. 9
for running back.
He had a 13-year prolific career as a running back.
And that shows his durability, too, right?
Right.
Because you are injured for a season, you're not going to make the Pro Bowl, yet he did, and he did so well. Really an historic career. Franco Harris in the Hall of Fame. Okay, so one thing I wanted to visit with you about looking at the game this week, it is so funny, the hype differential. Think of the differential and the hype between Patrick Mahomes and Jimmy G, right? All the talk is about Patrick Mahomes, perhaps on track to become the greatest quarterback ever, and he is spectacular. He can make every throw. He can run around. He's got all the skills you'd ever want in a quarterback. But there is this other guy, Jimmy G, and he wins pretty well, but he's not getting a lot of love right now from the media.
No, he's really not. It's like Patrick Mahomes versus game manager Garoppolo.
Right.
I mean, I just want to – every morning when I've turned on the TV while we're here at Radio Row, the headline's either Kobe or Patrick Mahomes.
Yes.
And I'm like, does anyone realize? I mean, let's take a step back here that Jimmy Garoppolo last year was out with the torn ACL. San Francisco's record was 4-12. Garoppolo comes back this season, leads them to a 13-3 record and a trip to the Super Bowl. I don't call that kind of performance a game manager. Now, is San Francisco a complete team? Yes. They have the number 2 defense in the league. These running backs with, you know, Raheem Mostert. You've got Coleman, who's hopefully going to be healthy for Sunday. Breida. I mean, they've got George Kittle. I mean, they've got a complete team.
Well,
yes.
And remember,
but
yesterday we had Jen Welter here, and she said she loved that song, Bring Sexy Back. Well,
yeah,
the 49ers had brought the fullback back, and she was delighted. The fullback is back in the offense with the 49ers.
I love that you're
that, that old school ability to run the ball.
Yeah.
But does that diminish Jimmy G in your eye?
No, it doesn't, because let me give you 2 numbers. 154 passer rating for Jimmy G when he's out of the pocket. Would you have guessed that? If I gave you that rating, say, put a quarterback to that rating, would you have guessed?
No, it is funny, though. I don't even think of him as getting out of the pocket much. It's right. Such a contained, organized, structured offense.
That's Shanahan.
Yes.
That's Shanahan. Like, taking what the defense gives you and keeping with what's working.
Right.
I wish Bill O'Brien would take, like, a page from that. Hello. Also, here's another great one. Shanahan is the best in the league, number one, in fourth quarter performance within one possession.
So he's clutch.
Leads the league. He's Mr. Clutch. So let's hope that happens Sunday if you're a 49er fan. But I don't want to take away from the greatness of Patrick Mahomes. He is incredible, and he's transcendent, and he is leading along with the Deshaun Watsons and Lamar Jacksons of the world, the dual threat quarterback era, and just taking it to new heights. But he is not the only quarterback, and I don't know. How do you feel? Would you call Jimmy G a game manager? And what do you make of that? If you're Kyle Shanahan, how are you feeling about the apparent kind of disrespect that your quarterback is getting?
Well, I think that Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy G should be very comfortable with this. To fly under the radar, to let the media boost up the Chiefs, that high-flying offense, and Patrick Mahomes is just fine. In fact, the hype machine on that offense, it sort of reminds me of the greatest show on turf. Remember that offense with the Rams, and they had all those great receivers, Bruce, and they had Kurt Warner, and they were on fire. And I just almost feel like it's that kind of an offense with that kind of hype. But then, of course, as we might remember, the Patriots came in and slowed them all down and slowed the game down, controlled the clock, and were able to come out with a win. And that would be the worst nightmare for Kansas City if the 49ers are able to keep Patrick Mahomes off the field.
Yes, and I think that's really what they need to do. And
yeah.
They've got the number two defense in the NFL. You don't get to a Super Bowl by accident.
Right.
And you've also got – there's so obviously so many storylines involved. San Francisco gets off to typically very fast starts, which we've seen in the past three games before the Super Bowl. And they tend to ease off or let opponents back in for whatever reason in the second half. Kansas City, the opposite. We saw them come from behind in the last two games before going to the Super Bowl from double-digit leads, a 24-0 beat down by the Texans until they were able to turn it on. So that'll be interesting to see.
Let's pause on that. So, yes, 49ers have been a fast-starting team and the Chiefs a slow-starting team. If that gets inverted, though, if for some reason the Chiefs get out to a 14-0 lead, I worry for the sake of the 49ers. That's where Jimmy G is not as adept. If the Chiefs get behind by 14-0, I think based on what we've seen the last few weeks, everyone will say, okay, well, Mahomes will turn it on. He'll get there. They'll light it up. Stand by. Here come the Chiefs. After they came back against your beloved Texans, down 24-0, and Mahomes just lit it up.
There was also help from the ineptitude of Bill O'Brien as head coach, now GM, clock manager, capologist, and game manager.
I'm going to get you another one of those Nauseen tablets because I can see your stomach churning
Thank
again.
Thank goodness Jose brought it.
Your angst about Bill O'Brien and the Texans rears its ugly head again.
It just hurts me.
We'll get you some Nauseen.
They did have help from some coaching
on
the other end.
I mean, I think when O'Brien had a 24-0 lead, he should have gone for it on fourth and one. Instead of kicking that field goal, he should have gone for the jugular and tried to knock out the Chiefs while he had his chance.
We won't even go into the fake punt. But back to Kansas City. I think that's got to be a game plan for Kansas City. I did hear one of the players talk about our practices. We are starting fast because they haven't. That's been a tricky thing. And you've got to know Kyle Shanahan is expecting that and ready for that.
That Shanahan offense, though, really is built around being able to run and then running that play action and play action boot out of the run. And they do it so well.
They do.
But it really does start with the run, where the Chiefs have the flexibility. They can throw to set up the run, or they can run to set up the pass. And the 49ers are a bit more one-dimensional. Now, the 49ers...
Maybe. I mean, you've got George Kittle. I love what I see.
He's good.
There. Do you... Question for you. Kittle versus Kelsey. Who do you like? Are you just an automatic, I'm going to Kelsey? Or what do you think?
It's hard to separate Kelsey from Mahomes. What Kelsey and Mahomes do so well, I love that duo. I mean, the hard thing about the 49ers is they think about stopping that Mahomes offense is if they go man, the speedy wide receivers are going to blow right by them. I mean, it's really hard to slow down Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins.
Yep.
If they go zone, Kelce will find holes in there. He'll sit down in the middle of the zone. Either way, the Chiefs have sort of an answer for what the 49ers will do. So it's really not going to be about the coverage to me. 49ers will mix up the coverage. They'll do some zone. They'll do some man. It'll be more about whether the 49er front four can apply pressure as a four-man unit. If they can apply pressure and maybe have a spy behind them who can track Mahomes and prevent him from reeling off one of those really long runs or a first down conversion type run, then they've really applied five people, the four rushers and a fifth guy as a spy, to slow down Mahomes or to go after Mahomes. And then you've got, well, in that case, you'd have about six guys back in coverage, and you probably need to mix up a zone and pass defense. But it's a chess match.
It's a chess match. And, you know, you look at San Francisco's D-line. So there's five first-round draft picks in those linemen. And the other four were top 10 draft picks. So out of the nine, everybody was in the top 10. San Francisco's had 48 sacks on the season. 41 of them have come from the linemen. I mean, that's a stout, fierce, fast, focused defense.
Yeah, to get a rush from those guys will be critical. But it has to be a contained rush. These ends can't come crashing in because they're going to be in a spot where they just, well, Mahomes will get outside them, and then he buys himself time, and he can heave the ball downfield to a Sammy Watkins who's going deep. So it's got to be a contained rush. But that is a great defensive front. Dee Ford, of course, was a first-round pick, but with the Chiefs and then traded here to the 49ers, and he's got a little chip on his shoulder after what happened in last year's playoffs. Dee Ford, of course, well, he was penalized against the Patriots, and really the Chiefs might have been in the Super Bowl last year had that play not gone against Dee Ford.
Exactly. And then he got let go. He's got a lot of axes to grind.
Yep.
So let's hope he plays his heart out if you're a 49er fan.
Both teams appear to be relatively healthy. They've had this break where they've had a chance to get themselves ready for the game. And it's fun to have the full suite of players back. Coleman's coming back in at running back. I mean, Mozart stepped in beautifully for the 49ers in the championship game. But looks like everybody who needs to be on that field will be there, that injuries will not be a big factor in the showdown.
You know who's going to be there? Pretty much the entire SEC. Out of both Super Bowl teams, okay, so you're looking at a roster of 106 players. I don't know if they carry a little more for the Super Bowl. 32 players are from the SEC that are playing this weekend on Sunday.
Right.
How crazy is that? That is a third. A third are from one of the Power Five conferences. Woo! Man.
Well, I guess if you're a draft Nick, I guess if you're a general manager, that's the place to go to fish in the right waters, which is the SEC. Just incredible what they've been able to do. One last reflection as we wind up our show today is it just wasn't that long ago that we were sitting here 1 year ago and we were talking about a young coach who was a genius and an emerging quarterback who was going to be really, really, really good. Yes. And so then last year it was Sean McVay, the genius coach, and the young quarterback in Jared Goff, and a great running game in Todd Gurley. And they seemingly had all the pieces together. And here we sit this year, and many of the same words, the same type of coverage is being applied now to Kyle Shanahan and to Jimmy G and to their great running game. And the offensive wonder kind, the whole mystery of the genius and the young boy genius. Remember, a year ago, everyone wanted to hire the next Sean McVay. Well, now everyone wants to find the next Kyle Shanahan.
And Matt LaFleur and all tried. Zach Taylor, absolutely.
In Arizona, they did the same thing. So.
Yep. Kingsbury.
It just shows how quickly things can turn. Rams now not even in the playoffs. And, of course, here they sit, the 49ers in the playoffs. It will be fascinating to watch where the Rams are a year from now. There's no certainty in the NFL. You've got to take advantage of your Super Bowl opportunity when you're here.
It's a what have you done for me lately league.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. And, yeah, I think that the Rams were surprisingly exposed last year in that Super Bowl. They couldn't get a thing going.
Well,
and they have never recovered.
So if the parallel holds out, you've got, last year it was the great mastermind, Bill Belichick, teaching the youngster, the great offensive wonderkind, Sean McVay, really putting the old guy, put the new guy in place. Well, this year, Andy Reid is this year's version of Bill Belichick. His pedigree, short of the Super Bowl, is on par with some of the great coaches of all time. He just has not won the big game yet. And this year's offensive one of a kind is Kyle Shanahan. So if
Are you making a prediction?
Well, I...
Kind of an under the radar?
Yeah,
what do you
think? It's just hard to bet against Andy Reid and that offense and what they can do, whether they're ahead or behind. That is a heck of a team. So, yeah, I'm leaning toward the Chiefs.
Okay.
Great game, though. Great matchup. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. All right, we are live on Radio Row. And, Ron, are we permitted to talk? Let's talk a little football here.
Okay, I want to find out from you, David. We have had some amazing guests today. We've had Justin Tuck.
Yes.
Longtime New York Giants defensive end. Chris Long, two-time Super Bowl MVP. Not Super Bowl MVP. Two-time Super Bowl champ, Howie Long's son. Longstanding Rams, won back-to-back with New England and then Philly. Franco Harris, who broke your heart and mine, the running back from the Steelers.
Yes.
That killed the Cowboys' dreams and the Oakland Raiders. And then we had a great visit from Ed McCaffrey as well, Christian McCaffrey's father, new coach of University of Northern Colorado. What a great surprise that was. I can't pick a favorite, so I'm going to turn to the boss.
Really?
Tell me who you love
today.
You're
just going to pass the buck on this one, aren't you?
I am going to do it because they were all so great to me. But you have a savvy eye, so let's see. Who is your favorite?
Number one, I'll give you two, but number one has to be Franco Harris. What he's done, he did as a player was just unparalleled. And by the way, I'm going to pick Franco, independent of the fact that he left us a little souvenir. Franco came by promoting a brand of CBD, so I've got some CBD pain reliever here. And I noticed you've been applying it all over your body ever since he walked out of the room.
I noticed that you're holding it up to me. Do you need to relieve yourself from the pain of airing a show with me?
It's enough is enough.
I know it is.
I will not take any CBD.
Okay, good. That's good.
Today.
That's
I'll do it later. No, Franco, just exceptional. To be a 9-time Pro Bowler as a running back is just amazing. And it was fun because I remember it this way, and it's fun to get his confirmation that Franco Harris in the first two Super Bowls, the Steelers were really a run team.
Old school.
A ground and pound team with a great defense. And then, of course, they converted. And 2 years later, they were heaving the ball all over the field. Bradshaw was throwing it deep to Stallworth and Swan, and they really transformed their offense.
A lineup.
Oh. Great defense was the consistent element through those great Steeler teams of the 70s, and clearly they were the team of the 70s. That was their great, great season of time for the Steelers franchise. So I'm going to go with Franco. It was exceptional to see him, and he really looks good still.
He looks absolutely amazing.
He always had that very thick body and big shoulders. He's that old school running back that almost physically looked between a running back and a fullback. He moved very well. And he caught the ball out of the backfield well.
No,
immaculate reception, certainly the highlight
of
his ability.
Sorry,
Raider fan. But yes, his ability, he was a complete back, really was. But talking to Ed McCaffrey was a real delight as well. I remember Ed McCaffrey as being a great wide receiver for the Broncos, all those great seasons they had together. But then to talk to him about his son, Christian McCaffrey, and what Christian is doing now for the Panthers was a real treat. I mean, Christian McCaffrey, we mentioned this off the air with Ed, but Marshall Faulk came out yesterday and said when he sees Christian McCaffrey, Marshall Faulk said, I see a better version of myself.
I was going to say he is kind of the new age of the running back and what you can do with them. And I think Derrick Henry's taking some pages from that book, which Christian McCaffrey should be taking the Heisman from him, in my opinion. But nonetheless, you know, using them in the Wildcat, using them in different positions. And I what I loved about Ed is talking about Christian, you asked him, when did you know that he was special? He said 7 years old.
Right.
But he was realistic about it. He said, yeah, he was great at seven, but I also realized he's seven. Like, we're not going to do too much on this, but it turned out to be very true, and voila.
Well, he made a great point. A lot of seven-year-olds, the guy who's a standout at seven may just have matured or grown up a little bit faster.
That may be his peak, but not so much for Christian McCaffrey. I think he's on the way for a really exciting career. And let us not forget, he passed all-time great running back Barry Sanders in all-purpose yards in college. That's astounding.
Well, I think Ed appreciated the fact that you have long been touting Christian McCaffrey. You were saying he should have been the Heisman Trophy winner that season where he was at Stanford for that very reason. And to break Barry Sanders' record was exceptional.
It was exceptional. And at that point, Barry Sanders' son was also a running back on the Stanford team. So kind of extra cool. But, you know, there's a West Coast bias, East Coast bias, and it's tough to be a Pac-12 team and win the Heisman. And I can say that because you had runner-ups in Toby Gerhart, Andrew Luck, and now Christian McCaffrey. So kind of tough. You know, I'm always a West Coast gal, so I'm going to
The Panthers team intrigues me a little bit.
How about a lot of it?
Well, bringing in Matt Rhule and signing him to a long-term deal has its risks, right? Matt Rhule has never been an NFL head coach.
He went from Temple to Baylor to now the NFL.
And those are big leaps. I mean, Baylor's not exactly a powerhouse nationally in the NFL. So to sign Matt Rhule, a bit of a leap, I think it's a good bet. Obviously, bringing in Joe Brady from LSU feels right. But he's a very young guy, too, and that's a heck of a step.
30.
Look how quickly he has ascended.
Youngest OC in the league.
So he will be the OC. And then they've got to figure out the quarterback position. Cam Newton's still on the roster for a reasonable cap number next year, I think about $16 million. So they could keep Cam. They could play with Kyle Allen. They could go out and find somebody else. I mean, there are other names out there that will be available to them. Teddy Bridgewater certainly would be a name they would have to consider. But everything's wide open on that team right now.
Well, it's wide open until they have a full medical evaluation on Cam Newton.
Right.
I mean, and no one's been able to do that because he's been recovering, whether it was shoulder surgery, foot surgery, whatever it was. That's going to be the deciding factor, really, I think, for Carolina.
All right, we will look forward to that. You have been listening to a special edition of the Boston the Gloss, SB Nation Radio.